Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Anand Girdardas grew up in America. His parents had emigrated from India for opportunity out of reach in their home country. But that was a generation before India stepped onto the world stage as a rising economic star. 5 years ago, Anand went back to India, the old country, to see what was new. He got an eyeful. This hour, On Point, a young Indian-American reports on going back to India. You can join the conversation. Have you gone back to where your family came from, back to India? Is the opportunity there now or still here in the USA? Joining me now from Panaji in Goa, India, is Anand Girdardas. He's been a writer for the International Herald Tribune and the New York Times, based in Mumbai for the last 3 years. He first moved to Mumbai in 2003 with the American management consulting firm McKinsey & Company. His father emigrated to the United States from India in 1977, and his mother soon followed. Anand, thank you very much for being with us.
Tom, it's lovely to be with you.
You write that in his mid-20s, this is back in the 70s, your father's drive and energy began to chafe against the stagnancy and inertia of India, and it brought him to the United States. What took you back to India?
It wasn't the same thing. It wasn't the same sense of hopelessness that I think he might have felt in that time period. I think it was a mix of a few things. I think it was partly a sense that a country that I had been visiting periodically every 2 or 3 years had towards 2000, 2002, suddenly had a new energy in its stride. And it was small things. It was, you know, little coffee shops that didn't exist before. It was going to a nightclub for the first time in India and sort of being shocked at the idea that India had nightclubs. And little things like that. As well as this kind of sense in the world that not so much that anything was wrong with America at the time, but that something that I had neglected and ignored and kind of kept to the side might actually be more compelling and interesting than I had ever given it credit for.
What was the, if you look back on your childhood in the United States, where were you born in the U.S., Anand?
I was born in Cleveland, Ohio.
Cleveland, Ohio. And so growing up in the U.S., and visiting occasionally, but still, I presume a lot of your sense of India came from stories around the kitchen table. What was the image that you had in mind?
You know, it's funny when you assemble a country in your head that way. It's funny how limited a picture it is. First of all, you're a child, so you're not particularly good at assembling pictures. The stories, I think, are in two genres, casting India in a very negative and a very positive light. In the extreme, the negative light is the obvious one, which is that you are sitting at a kitchen table having these stories told in America, which is obviously some evidence that things were not going great over there. On the other hand, there's a kind of nostalgia about the old country, which is, I think, typical of any immigrant family, and kind of all that is good and pure and simple is kind of imagined to be there. So, you know, here in America, you kids need to play with toys, but we played with each other when we were children. Or, you know, here in America, everyone consumes, but in India, people are happy just with family. Those kind of pieties, some of them true, some of them not true.
You write that your parents married in India, then embarked to America on a lonely, thrilling adventure. They made that kind of passage, and you wrote last month in the New York Times, now there is a generation of younger Indians who are kind of looking back and wondering if they ought to at least have a foot in each country. How real, how widespread is that, Anand?
You know, I think the numbers are hard to assess. One measure that I looked at when I was writing that piece was something called the OCI, the Overseas Citizen of India card, which you can get, which allows people who are citizens of other countries but with some Indian heritage to come back more easily, do business more easily, etc. 280,000 people have signed up for that in the last few years, which is not to say that all of them are here. In fact, most of them are not here. But it kind of correlates with a growing interest in coming back. I think anecdotally, it's more interesting. I mean, if you go to really good restaurants, if you go to really good fashion boutiques, if you look at training companies that train people to work in these software companies, a lot of them are founded by people who have come back.
So you write, if our parents left India, here's the heart-stirring question, if our parents left India and trudged westward for us, if they manufactured from scratch a new life there for us, if they slogged, saved, sacrificed to make our lives lighter than theirs, then what does it mean when we choose to migrate to the place they forsook? In this place, India, what does it mean?
You know, I think there, I thought about that a lot. That question from my mother was what triggered this article in a way. I think there are two ways to read it, and perhaps this is self-serving, but you know, let me go for it anyway.
Hey, we're human.
I think at a surface level, this is a reversal of what they did. They went, if you look at it in terms of, you know, a compass, they went one way and I went the other way. The more I've thought about this, I actually think that if my parents had broken away from everything they knew, made those ruptures, those difficult ruptures, gone to the adventure of a new country, and then their kid had kind of just stayed in the same country where he knew all his certainties, I would actually be far less rebellious and far less interesting than they. I think I'm doing exactly the same thing they did. It's just that the countries are switched around.
What's it like to be back in India for these 5 years as an Indian American? Are you instantly recognized as such by your accent, by your posture, your attitude, or can you blend in? And when people do understand that you're an Indian American, are you welcomed back? What kind of reception do you get?
Well, first of all, on the kind of superficial thing, it kind of works different ways. Just in terms, it is interesting. I mean, V.S. Naipaul once talked about this when he came to India, and he was, of course, Trinidadian of Indian origin. Mm-hmm. And he said the shock of India for him was looking like everybody else for the first time in his life. And there is a bit of that. I mean, in a big, you know, crowd, of which there are plenty in India, it's kind of, you know, the first time in your life when, you know,
you're just one atom in the flow of molecules.
Exactly. And yet, in every other way, I'm far more different from that crowd than I am in, you know, say, Boston or Washington or Cleveland, because the way I dress, the way I talk, the way I think, the way I, you know, everything. I think, you know, if people pay attention, people are very aware. You can tell by the prices you're charged for things that people are quite aware. More substantively, in terms of being welcomed, I think it's an in-between limbo space. I think now this is less of a problem for me five years in. When I first moved, the thing I noticed is I had friends who were, my very closest friends were this French couple. And I noticed that we would go out together. And at the end of the night, you know, I thought all three of us were equally compelling, I hoped. And at the end of the night, the two of them would always have various invitations to meet at the subsequent place, and they would be begged for phone numbers and all of this.
This is by Indian compatriots, right, that you're dining with, yeah.
Right. And I would, that would always kind of just escape me. And I, you know, it was fine. What I kind of realized is I was too...
You weren't
too
special enough as an Indian American?
I wasn't as special as them, mm-hmm, as exotic.
Yeah,
I wasn't seemingly deserving of help. Mm-hmm. They were two fledgling French people.
Right, you should figure it out for yourself.
Exactly. But at the same time, I wasn't blended in enough to be treated like one of the boys.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a kind of limbo. But I think over time you find your ways to deal with that. You know, for example, you learn the language, which is a very helpful thing.
I would say so. And do you see that changing? In 2003, you first got there. You were with the McKinsey American Management Consulting Firm. Now it's 5 years later. Maybe you've changed, or maybe India in its continuing globalization has changed even in those 5 years.
I think both. And I think one of the kind of funny things about doing this job is, I'm talking about the writing job here, is that in a way you are, you know, officially this kind of neutral ambassador, detachedly chronicling what's happening in India for a Western audience. And at least for me, what I found is that in this same time period, I'm becoming more Indian. So even as I'm kind, you know, it's not in enormous ways, and it's not in every way, but in certain ways, I am. And so you're writing about this civilization for others, but you're becoming the civilization in certain ways.
Your parents look at you and scratch your head, wondering why you're back there 5 years and counting now, or not.
I have to say, I mean, aside from the occasional, you know, remark like the one at the beginning of that article, my parents are the best of.
Were they asked
all
what are we
Indian
doing
Americans?
Here when our son is there?
Well, that was her question, mm-hmm. but I actually think she, to be in fairness, she asked that question less than almost any other parents I know of people in the same position as me. And a lot of people I know, their parents were actually explicitly angry. Mine never were. And people's parents have said, you know, we spent our whole lives getting you out of that hellhole. What are you doing going back?
We're talking with Anand Giridharadas. He joins us today from Goa in India. He spent most of the last 5 years in Mumbai. His parents emigrated from India to the United States. Now, he's one of a number of Indian Americans, young Indian Americans, who have gone back to check it out, and there is a lot to see. Anand, stand by there in Goa. Here's music from a big Bollywood hit movie. The song summons Indian emigres to come home. It says, come home, emigre. Your country is calling you. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about India with a young Indian American who's gone back for 5 years to the land of his ancestors. Anand Giridharadas joins us from Goa in India. He spent most of the last 5 years in Mumbai, first with the McKinsey & Company, the American management consulting firm, then with the International Herald Tribune and writing for the New York Times. His parents emigrated to the U.S. He was born in Cleveland. Let's take a call from Morrisville, Vermont, and Raman. Raman, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
I'm in Morrisville, Vermont. I came to this country like, you know, like what we're talking about in 72.
Okay.
And I've been living in Vermont for about 27 years. And I have a son who was born here.
Mm-hmm.
And he, even though he looks very much Indian, he identifies himself as an American.
Mm-hmm.
And He went back to India just for a visit for 6 months to find out if he would like to do a similar thing, but he did not like it at all. So I don't know what's going on.
Raman, where did he go? What city? Are all around the country?
He did travel a little bit, but mm-hmm. he spent most of his time in Chennai, India. Chennai, Madras.
What was Madras in the south, the southeast? And what was his problem? What did he not like?
He just says it's too crowded. And people are selfish. That's another thing that I get from him. Of course, I don't buy that because I also frequently visit, and my wish is he spends some more time there, that he would like it. But his reaction is totally, you know, totally negative, and he doesn't think India had anything to offer to him.
Right. Fascinating. He dipped his toe and decided, no thanks, not for him. Raman, thanks for calling. Anand, what do you make of that story? And what's your experience of watching people come, taste, and judge?
I have to say, you know, I have, you know, 10, 20 very good friends in Bombay, but I have, you know, 100 to 200 people who fit the description of his son who have kind of breezed in, breezed out, and decided it wasn't for them. So it's not, you know, but I think that would happen anywhere. You know, in response to his point, I think, first of all, 6 months is not a long time, and I'm not sure that I was thrilled for the first 6 months. There was certainly parts of that time when I, particularly one time in particular, I wrote a long, I think it was a, you know, 3,000-word email to my parents explaining everything wrong with their country. So it wasn't, you know, it wasn't perfect. The one point I would add is I think it depends what you do for a living. Because I did both jobs, McKinsey is a great place, but I was less happy at McKinsey because I think I was just doing a job that I frankly could have done anywhere,
mm-hmm.
and just enjoying or not enjoying the inconveniences of India on the side. I think when I started to write, all the inconveniences, all the little problems, all the things that you just say, why the hell is it like this?
Mm.
Those become your problems to solve. Those become things you need to understand. Those become things you can go read about,
mm-hmm.
ask people about. And if I was doing another job, I'm not sure that I would enjoy it as much as I do.
You write about what you call a fusion class. And I guess by that you mean potentially Indian Americans or emigre Indians returning from elsewhere who fuse Indian culture and tempos and outlook with the country abroad and put something maybe new together. Are you part of that class?
In a way. I mean, you know, I think, first of all, when I say fusion class, the really interesting thing that's happened is between the time my parents emigrated, which is when a lot of emigration from India happened, and my time, what is the big change in our lives? All this communication technology, internet, etc. This changes in a very fundamental way what it means to emigrate. I think when my parents went, they went, and they had no expectation of keeping in touch with the home country.
In other words, when they left India, when they went to the States, that was it.
That was it. They could come back potentially. They could make phone calls, but you know what? Phone calls are very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Flights were expensive. They didn't go until they were pretty sure that they were going. That was it. I don't think you need to make those kind of decisions today because, first of all, even when I'm in my little village where I live here, I can be on the internet and in touch with people. It's kind of cheaper to fly back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the fusion class is a class of people then who takes advantage of that change in the nature of emigration and doesn't do a one-time, all-or-nothing move, but kind of continually cross-pollinates between the multiple societies to which they have access. So I know musicians who are, you know, they may have gone to the Juilliard School
mm-hmm.
And be extremely well-versed in Western music, but they're Indian and they will come to Bombay and mix some beats with DJs there and go play it in New York or
sure.
pick something up in New York and go play it in Bombay. And that's happening in fashion. That's happening in, you know, every other conceivable profession.
So it's not just fusion in people. It's fusion, actually, in a global system, in the world itself. Let's get a call from Harish in Boston. Harish, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you doing?
Very well. What do you know, Harish?
Sorry?
What do you know?
Well, it's basically I want to make a point, which is I grew up... Well, actually, I'm from India. I was born in India,
mm-hmm.
but I grew up in Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
But I used to go to India every year. Now I live in Boston.
Uh-huh.
And when I go to India every year, especially for the last, like, 5 to 8 years, I just got back. The changes have been so dramatic. It's crazy. It's a whole new country. And
like what? What strikes you most, Harish?
It's the modernization of the country. It's just so, so amazing to me where... there was a time when you would not see certain things in India, like everything from how the rampant spread of technology has taken its place over there. And, you know, now when I can't distinguish between a mall in India and a mall in the United States. But all that said and done, there are certain things that haven't changed in India, which is there is still lots of poverty. And I don't think that poverty has changed in India at all. I mean, there are people still all around the place who are basically begging and who are destitute. India still holds 2/3 of the world's malnourished children. And so there's a point that I want to make, which is that mm-hmm. there is a certain class of India that has raced ahead and that has, you know, done remarkably well. But this whole idea of trickle-down has really not, I have not seen it come into play yet. That's just the point that I wanted to make.
Harish, it's an important one. With hundreds of millions of people still in poverty in India, Anand, what do you say to this observation?
I couldn't agree more. And let's not say this lightly. The poverty problems in India are absolutely morally disgusting, and they continue. It's just under half of all children are malnourished today. The country doesn't have a shortage of food in the aggregate, but it manages to starve one half of all children. The kind of mental issues this leads to, and that's just one simple measure. You know, Bombay is a majority slum dweller city. And it's not just, you know, the caller talked about people being left behind. I actually like to put it a little different way. I think being left behind is the beginning of the problem. I think it's a treatment problem as well, that rich people don't treat poor people particularly well. And it's systematic. And you walk into very nice hotels in India and there's these men in the bathroom who, you know, put soap onto your hand and, you know, say the word sir 100 times in 1 minute and give
hoping
you a little towel.
Hoping for a little tip.
Well, I don't even know. I mean, I don't see most people tipping them. I don't think that's what it's about anymore. I just think something's been drilled into their heads that you are a sir and you're the kind of person that who needs to have soap squeezed into your hands. And it doesn't matter how much money that guy makes. There's a dignity problem, not just a left-behind problem. And I fully agree. It's the kind of optimism that drew me back is certainly not everybody's optimism.
Has India's economic growth improved the lot of some substantial portion of the country's lower ranks in the economy or not?
Absolutely. I mean, I think the problem is when you're dealing with a billion point two mm-hmm. people, both realities are stunningly true. So there are undoubtedly, if you are a free market conservative and you want to sell a story that trickle down has worked in India, you can find about 100 million people, which is a lot of people, to support this point. If you want to make the opposite point, you can find about, 500-600 million people to make your point. And both are valid. I think what has changed is less to do with income, although there are a lot of people who with rising income. I think it has more to do with the concept of accepting a place in life. And I think there's a very large minority of Indians today who have ceased to accept the idea of an inherited, inevitable place in life.
What is, and of course that in itself would be an enormous change for India with its caste system of time immemorial. What about India's economy in the rough global economy? We've heard lots of stories about layoffs in China, factories shut down there, and so on. How is India faring in the global economic tumult?
I mean, obviously, those same forces are very threatening. Consumer credit has dried up. A lot of people who were getting jobs at airlines and various other kind of new growing industries have lost those jobs. I've seen salary cuts. I mean, it goes as fast as it comes. That's the problem. I think the one thing, and we don't know how this is going to play out, the one thing that distinguishes India is a fairly vigorous amount of internal domestic consumer demand. And the theory that people have often raised is that India is somewhat more insulated than China from the global economy for the precise reason that it's not as much of an exporter as China. But I don't know that will bear out.
I'm also looking here at The Economist magazine saying they've got public ownership of banks, limits on borrowing abroad, strict prudential rules on investment and the flow of money at home. Still some of those restraints that have in some degree buffered India from some of the global trouble right now.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Let's go to Paul in Ramona, California. Paul, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you. With India becoming such a vibrant global economy, I wonder if your guest felt like, is the Indian government actively pursuing these immigrants to get them to come back to India?
Anand, what about it?
I wouldn't say actively, but on the other hand, I'm not sure I can think of any activity that the Indian government pursues actively. So it could be a definitional problem. But let me, I think certain steps have been taken, including that card I mentioned, the Overseas Citizen of India card. Mm-hmm. Clearly, that's an effort to make it easier for people like us to come back. And it has tangible benefits, from as you skip the line in the airport and you go to the special kind of VIP line if you have that card, which is small but kind of, lingers in people's minds. You don't have to register every 6 months with the government the way other foreigners do. So those small things are steps. But the relevant comparison here is China, and China is kind of famous for squeezing everything it could out of overseas Chinese. And I think most scholars would say that the Chinese success story is very much a story of the kind of very clever use of overseas Chinese. I don't think India has reached that level at all. This has all happened as everything in India, kind of bottom up and on its own.
Let's go to Priya, calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Priya, you're on the air with Anand.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Anand. I spent the last 3 years living in Delhi and Bombay, and I'm now back in Cambridge studying, getting my master's. And my question for you, Anand, is this a passing trend? Is this something that you're going to go back to the U.S. and stay in the U.S. after you're done there? And do you see Indian Americans coming back to India for a longer amount, for more than 5 years, 10 years, 15 years? Is there a permanent re-immigration, or is this sort of a passing trend?
Good question. Anand, I know you're headed back to the States soon, at least for a while, but how do you look now at these two countries and the arc of your life?
You know, I think going back to what I was saying earlier, there are two things that have changed in the world, not one. The one we've been talking about is a change in the kind of balance of power in the world and the kind of balance of attractiveness, which is a change that made India more attractive to me than it might have been before. But I think the other big change is the change in the nature of the way we belong to any country that we belong to. So I'm going back to America next year. I probably expect to come back to India.
You're going to grad school in the States. Actually, coming back to Cambridge, I think, in business school, Harvard.
I have to disclose that I think I know who that caller was, and I will be going to grad school in a similar place as that caller.
Yeah.
And I think that.
And then.
All of us will. I don't know if I'll come and live here again for another 5 years. I think in a way that's not the point. Mm-hmm. I think what will now happen, which I never thought would have happened, is that this will be a permanent portion of whatever I do. And that could mean living here again and being connected to the West, the way I kind of am in this job. Mm-hmm. Or it could mean being in the West and having some connection to India. It could be 6 months, 6 months. When I was growing up, I didn't think I would do any more than the two-week, every two-year thing. And I think now this will be part of every year and every job I do.
Wow. William in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Anand. I just two quick points. One, I tend to take a really positive look at guys like Anand and going back to their native country, because India has progressed. The trend over the recent decades has mm-hmm. been a trend of progression, even though clearly there's a lot going on over there. And I think it's a little bit of Indian patriotism, if for lack of a better word. And the other point I'd like to make is I've had a really dear friend who's Pakistani who came into the United States, very similar story, and they have no interest, sadly, in going back to their country. So I think it's a tribute to the progress that India has made and will continue to make if guys like Anand do what they're doing.
So a tip of the hat there from Myrtle Beach. Thank you, William. Anand, in this kind of fusion picture that you're painting, how do you think of your national identity then?
You know, I have to say that I was telling you before about in some ways feeling more Indian. I don't think that in my fundamentals I am as American as I ever was, and I think in many ways in your core sense of self, living abroad sometimes hardens it further, and I'm. In a kind of fundamental sense of how I see myself in the world, I think very American. I think the small things are Indian. I think understanding the value of family. That doesn't mean I can live in a family with 12 people the way most Indians can, but it means I can be a little more patient about some of that stuff than before. It changes the food you like. I think it changes the kind of the way you take care of people. There's a kind of warmth. You know, but I don't think that you fully become Indian by any means.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about India with a young Indian American who's gone back for 5 years to the land of his ancestors. Anand Gerdadas joins us from Goa in India. He spent most of the last 5 years in Mumbai, Bombay, and is sharing some of his thoughts about that experience as his country, that or India, has been on a kind of sharp upward curve, at least if you're in the glistening part of things. A lot of problems there as well. We'll talk about them. Let's go to Manuk in Providence, Rhode Island. Manuk, you're on the air.
Thank you very much. Great. My brother Anand, I just admire you for what you've done. And I'm in my fifth year as well. As I'm all-American, I'm decorated Vietnam veteran, but I went back to Armenia. My parents, our grandparents left there in the genocide at the beginning of the last century. And I just made the same decision you did. And I wanted to ask you, what should we bring as Americans and what should we not bring as Americans to the culture? And I want to also say I meet Armenians from India, in Armenia, and I said they're my best friends. And I look and celebrate at that diversity, and I was going to ask if you see other Indians from other parts of your diaspora as well coming in.
Anand? And so, yeah, what do you say?
I think that I'm going to go to the first question first. There's a very, very interesting, important question that I think is unresolvable and therefore really, really powerful. I think when you come, and this is not just as an Indian, Indian-American mm-hmm. coming to India, anyone who comes to another country, you're different and you're tempted by things you don't like to want to change some of those things or want to think that your way is better. I think one of the dilemmas of traveling is always to restrain yourself from that. I think it is different when you're in some way from that country because you have a kind of natural license or credibility to say a little bit more, perhaps, than an American showing up in India. I can get away with more in what I write, I think. I can be a little more critical sometimes, and people accept it. And I think the question of how much of those values do you bring in is very difficult. The difficult one. I think you shouldn't want India to be what you grew up with. But on the other hand, I think there are some universal things. For example, what I was talking to you about, dignity. The idea that people are people and that's it. And there's end of conversation is in some ways a very American idea. It's what Tocqueville saw in America when he came from France. And I, to be honest, have no problem imposing that idea on India. I think that idea is better.
Let's hope we carry that wherever we go. And what about a diaspora from other countries that India's recent economic strides may have attracted?
You mean people who are not in Indian origin or people who are
not Indian American? But do you find there, I don't know, Indians returning from the West Indies or from elsewhere in the world?
Not, I mean, it's essentially, I mean, there are exceptions, but it's essentially confined to America and England. And then there's a group of Indians called Sindhis who are kind of spread out all over the world, and you find some of them as well. They're often in Japan or the Canary mm-hmm. Islands, various places. They're coming back as well. But it's obviously confined to, let's be honest, places where Indians have done well enough that they can have the luxury to make the kind of choice that I made.
Right, have the means to go global. Manuk, thanks very much for your call. Let's get Gerald in Burlington, Massachusetts. Gerald, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Anand. I'm following your discussion here with a lot of interest because I'm in a somewhat different yet related kind of position. I migrated myself in 2000 from Germany.
Okay.
And I have two kids, one born over there and one here. Mm-hmm. And while it's now 2008, within those 8 years, Germany has changed dramatically from a number of different perspectives. So going back with them and seeing them essentially rediscover the old country and myself rediscovering it in its many ways has changed is quite an interesting experience.
Where do you expect, if you have to imagine, where do you imagine they will live their adult lives, Gerald, in Germany or the United States?
That is a very, very interesting question. I think it depends a little bit on whether we stay here now or whether we want to go back. We haven't quite made up our minds yet.
Has Germany changed for the better or worse, in your view, in these 8 years?
As always, I would say it changed. Some things got certainly better. Others got worse. It's also a very different experience, as Anand said before, migrating now in this day and age with internet, with news titles coming in through the web on a daily basis and phone calls that are almost free.
So there's less finality about that immigration.
It's true. Absolutely. I agree with that.
Interesting. So, an open question.
It is an open question, and I myself would love to go back at some point in time, at least for an extended period of time. But I feel myself really between the two continents right now. I mean, I filed for naturalization at this point in time. And so it's I'm really torn between between both continents. I love them both in each in their own different ways.
I think we're hearing voices of a new kind of fusion, maybe, which is very interesting for a nation of immigration like the United States. Gerald, thank you for calling. Let me go to Mosumi in Tewksbury, Massachusetts. Mosumi, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
I live in Massachusetts for the last 10 years, and I'm hearing the show, and it's good to know, like, good to know that India is prospering so much. But still, you know, the prosperous India that we're all talking about exists for a very, very minuscule population of India. And every year that I go back for a visit, I'm so pained by the poverty. And there are good things, but the poverty is something, you know, which makes me really sad. And that's the, when I come back here, that's just the one main reason why I'm always mentally plotting a way to go back home for good.
When you say home, do you mean India or the United States?
India.
And the poverty makes you, draws you back? Why?
Yeah, because, you know, I think, like, you know, educated people like us who come here for a better life, I think going back, we certainly, if we would try, we certainly would able to make a lot of difference in, you know, the life of poor people in India. And mm-hmm. that's just one main reason why I'm always, you know, thinking about, and I hope I can make that decision sometime. Though I love living here, I just hope I can make that decision sometime.
You might be able to help there. Mosumi, thank you very much for that. And let me get another from Rudy in Charlotte, North Carolina. Rudy, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Anand. Great discussion. I have a different perspective. I'm from a different generation. I immigrated from India about 40 years ago, sometime when your parents came over. And there, of course, was a lack of jobs. I had graduated from a very prestigious institute. But now, when I'm, you know, in my 60s now, I go back to India because I do business out there. And I have the same sense of feelings that you have. As an American, I bring a perspective that really looks down upon not treating everybody equally. I mean, that I agree with you that that's one of the big drawbacks in India. The second is, you know, I'm much more patient, you know, about the poverty. You kind of raised this very, very well. If you go with the flow, as they say, it's so much easier to take. And my technology skills, I just feel so elated that in a place like India, where entrepreneurial zeal is always very high, that they're able to leapfrog, you know, some of the mistakes that were made in the West to adopt new methods. But Anand, I really appreciate, you know, the insight you provided.
Rudy, do you anticipate, can you imagine a fusion generation of Indian Americans who have a foot in each nation and live that way?
Absolutely. In fact, that fusion idea is now, it's so, I think it's not only just India and America, it's going to be all possible combinations. You know, we see this in the lifestyles, we see this in the music, as Anand pointed out, we see this in this art, we see this in mores and just behavior. You know, the American behavior is no longer American, it's almost universal.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, at least part of a
universal symphony, anyway, that may have some blending going on. Rudy, thank you for that. And Anand,
Tom, let me add to the point that he was making. Let's not forget, as we talk about this, that we have just elected someone president of the United States.
Mm-hmm. Talk about fusion.
Who, although he chose not to explicitly run on this when he realized that it was not electorally helpful, is the most fusion-oriented candidate that's probably run for that kind of office anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
And whether it's living in Indonesia, whether it's being biracial, whether mm-hmm. it's his connection to America not even being on the Continental 48, there's something to this. And the link between his globalness and his governing style, which are two separate things, but they're very, very related. You get the sense that his immediate instinct is to always reach across to persuade the people who are not with him. If anything, neglects the people who are with him already. And well, I think that's the kind of habit that comes from the kind of life he's led.
We'll see. But maybe some new models emerging here, and they're a very prominent example in the president-elect. Let me go to Funjukta in Castleton, Vermont. Funjukta, you're on the air with Anand.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Anand.
Hi.
I have been in this country 24 years, and I came from Delhi, India. And I have gone back every single year, basically for my elderly parents. And I have two points to make. One is that I feel now, the over the last few years or over the last decade, I think India, the middle class and the urban centers are far more vulgarly materialistic than America that I have seen.
Wow.
And I feel that maybe because I'm in a state like Vermont, while America is now going back to community-supported agriculture or small community groups and trying to help each other in that way, India has, urban India, to specify, urban middle-class India, gone increasingly towards consumer goods and in a very, very conspicuous consumption. And so this leads me to my second point, and that is that the class distinctions have actually become more stark, have increased. And I would link it to the IMF World loans that were taken and the structural adjustment policies that came in, that they are always on the backs of the poor people. And so while the rich in India have become very obviously visibly rich, which is shown in the United States television, the poor have become far more poorer, and it's on their labor, on their backs, that the rich are becoming richer.
Funjukta, they're great points both, and let us pick it up. Anand, it's kind of amazing for, you know, India's reputation was always the land of the ashram and the yogi and the spiritual life, and now Funjukta seeing India more materialistic than the United States, what, at least in this particular class that's able. What do you say?
I think it's a very insightful point, insightfully made. I think this gets to the heart of what is not well in India. Inequality is one, and this is the other. Here's a way to think about this that is a little bit counterintuitive. I think conventionally you'd say India was without money, ashram, et cetera, et cetera, and now there's money and all of that. I think there's a different tripartite way to look at this. I think all of preceding Indian history, you could say pre-Gandhi, was by and large a history in the villages when people lived in their little neighborhoods and the untouchables were here and the Brahmins were here and everyone focused on their own group's advancement and interests. And I think the central contribution of Gandhi was to create an idea of Indianness that transcended that. And his great success is to make people feel an allegiance far larger than that. And I think what the caller points to is that all this forward progress, in a way, all this money, is in a strange way just returning India in a certain way to the way it always has been, which is no longer the actual village basti, which is the little settlement, but a kind of virtual basti where everyone's pursuing their family interest, everyone's trying to get into Duke and the University of Illinois and send their kids away, and everyone's trying to get a call center job, and everyone's trying to lock themselves in a little car and move into a gated community with a swimming pool and work on an outsourcing company that's completely gated away. And the old Indian tendency, the inwardness, and the resistance of the larger civic idea is in a strange way coming back.
Wow. So the pro and the con. I want to get one more call. And Anand, I swear we didn't set this up, but here you go. Anand Girdadas, this is your life from Washington, D.C. Nandini is calling. Nandini, I think you are Anand's mother.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Anand.
Hi.
Mom is on the line.
Oh, God.
What do you think of your son off to India for 5 years?
I wanted to call. I just could not resist calling, and I've been trying for the last 45 minutes. But I wanted to call and just say hi to him, congratulate him, and just tell him how proud I am.
And what do you think of the fact that he's gone back to the country that you and his father, your husband, left? Are you surprised?
I'm not surprised at all. Anand, you is full of surprises, so what's one more surprise? Anand is a person who has just amazed us in every which way. He has so amazingly been able to straddle both cultures. He has grown enormously. 5 years ago, he embarked on a journey that I don't think either he knew or we knew where it would take him and how long he would be gone. And I, when I look at him now, I am just so, so proud of where he is.
I apologize, but our time is so short. Do you care if he makes his life ultimately mainly in the United States or India? Do you?
No, I don't. I just want him to find his happiness wherever it is he can find it.
Anand, Mom gives you her blessing.
Well, she's always done that, which is why I'm doing this to begin with.
Wow, that's wonderful. I'm glad we could get you together, Mom in Washington and son in Goa. That's a long stretch.
Thank you for taking my call.
Oh, I'm so glad you got through. Nandini, mother of Anand, thanks for calling from Washington, D.C. And Anand, we'll have to talk again after you get back to the States and have time to settle in on this country for a while. But thank you for your word on your sojourn there in Mother India. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Anand Girdardas, Indian-American, back for 5 years in India, and his observations. Listeners, you can continue the conversation and download the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Here's a sound from India Now. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.